One should always remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his localized representation as the Paramatma situated in the core of every living entity's heart. Thus, one should offer respect to every living entity according to that living entity's position or manifestation. Purport, Hari, Sarveshu, Bhuteshu. This statement is sometimes misunderstood by unscrupulous persons who wrongly conclude that because Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is situated in every living entity. Every living entity is therefore Hari. Such foolish persons do not distinguish between the Atma and the Paramatma, who are situated in every body. The Atma is the living entity, the Paramatma is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The individual living entity, however, is different from the Paramatma, the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Hari, Sarveshu, Bhuteshu, means that Hari is situated as Paramatma, not as Atma, although Atma is part of Paramatma. Offering respects to every living entity means offering respect to the Paramatma situated in every living entity. One should not misunderstand every living entity to be the Paramatma. Sometimes unscrupulous persons designate a living entity as Darindra Narayana, Swami Narayana, this Narayana, or that Narayana. One should clearly understand that although Narayana is situated in the core of the heart of every living entity never becomes Narayana. Translation, which always remember, the Supreme Personality of God in his localized representation as the Paramatma who is situated in the core of every living entity's heart. Thus, one should offer respect to every living entity according to that living entity's position or manifestation. Prahlad has so far taught about the Supreme Lord, and the process of realizing him was the process of Bhakti Yoga. And in the previous verse, it was mentioned how there were various types of bhakti, such as serving guru, etc., worshipping the deity form, hearing, glorifying the Lord, etc. So those were the processes by which one can realize the Supreme Lord. So already the Lord has been somewhat described, and here again another verse defines the Supreme Lord in several different ways. He is defined as Hari, Bhagavan, Ishvara. So, of course, we know Bhagavan means one who possesses all bhaga, or good qualities. And then sometimes those qualities are defined as six qualities of Bhagavan, such as Aishwarya, Jnana, Vairagya, Shri, etc. So he has six wonderful qualities. That's common in definition. If one thinks about that, however, in one way, so how is this to be distinguished from Paramatma? Because Paramatma also has Aishwarya, Virya, Yasa, Shri, all these qualities, same qualities. So there's no real distinction between Paramatma and Bhagavan in that particular definition. Which is true, because often the words are interchangeably used. We talk about Paramatma, we also mean Bhagavan sometimes. However, when we do, in a particular way, speak of Paramatma, we distinguish him from Bhagavan, not in the sense that they are different, they're the same Supreme Lord, but Paramatma particularly refers to Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Shirodakshaya Vishnu, those forms of the Lord which relate to the material world. Whereas Bhagavan is in the spiritual world. So that's the difference when we talk about, you know, Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. And on the other hand, sometimes in scriptures we use the word Paramatma as simply equal to Bhagavan. They're both, you know, supreme Lord, etc., who is worthy of worship. So that's one idea there. The other idea, of course, is that there's another definition of Bhagavan. Since that definition is rather general, how do we distinguish that Supreme Lord Bhagavan who has an intimate relationship with devotees? That's what distinguishes him from Paramatma, who's simply the overseer of the material world, more or less. And he's neutral. He's sama, sarveshu bhuteshu. So how do we distinguish Bhagavan from him? So, there's another definition of Bhagavan by taking again the syllables Bha, Ga, and Va instead. So, as Mamsa is taken as Ma, Mama, Sa, He, and Me, or Diksha is taken as Divya Gyanam, and Papa says Samchayam. So, we get Bha, Ga, Va, three syllables Bha. So, Bha stands for Bhartra.
one who maintains. Of course, we can say, well, Paramatma maintains the whole material world. That's true. But then, of course, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, I supply what you lack and maintain what you have. So there's also a personal relationship with the Lord. Yeah? So in a more precise manner, in terms of bhakti, we can say that the Lord nourishes the bhakti of the devotee through his various pastimes and revelations, etc., and encourages the devotee to develop more attraction to him and more devotion. So, Bhartra therefore bows for Bhartra. Bhartra means the maintainer or nourisher of the sentiments of the devotee, one who nourishes their prema. So in that sense, yes, it's very suitable to Bhagavan. And gamayata, or ga comes from gam, means to go. So one who makes go or makes happen. So one who takes you to Vaikuntha, to the spiritual world. One who produces prema in the devotee. One who gives you a spiritual body, etc. One who somehow helps you in your goal of getting prema, etc. So he's gamayata. And va stands for vas. This means to live. So the devotees live in the Supreme Lord. That means the Supreme Lord is always thinking of the devotees. And simultaneously, the Supreme Lord is always in the devotees. The devotees are always thinking of the Lord. So in other words, there's mutual attraction between the Supreme Lord and the devotees. So that is Bhava. So one who possesses all of these is called Bhagavan. That's the one who nourishes the bhakti, increases the prema, takes you to the spiritual world, and is always thinking of the devotees. That he is the Bhagavan. So that is another definition to clearly show the distinction of the Bhagavan aspect from the Paramatma aspect of the Lord. Of course, we can also take the six qualities and again take a more personal interpretation of those qualities, like Sarvajna, all knowledgeable, etc. Paramatma, of course, is witnessing all the activities in the material world and in the spiritual world. Supreme Lord is aware of all the devotees and all of their different bhavas, etc., and responds according to their bhavas because he is omniscient, he is Sarvajna, he has all jnana. So we can also take for the six qualities, we can also give some sort of more intimate definition of those qualities. But in any case, Paramatma and Bhagavan, though as Gaudiya, as we generally describe them as separate, as I sometimes we also take them as more or less the same entity because they're both personal forms of the Lord. With some qualities, though the qualities in Bhagavan are more intimate. So that is one point. So here we have in this verse, we have Bhagavan mentioned, and then we have Hari, then we have Ishvara. Of course, Ishvara means Lord, or Supreme Lord, literally one who controls everything. He is the controller. So we see within the definition of Bhagavan, one aspect is Aishvarya. The word Aishvarya comes from Ishvara, controller. So, therefore, this is one particular aspect of the Lord. It also applies to Paramatma form. He's also the controller of everyone. And of course, secondarily, it also applies to Shiva. He's also a controller. He's Maheshwara. Hari generally applies only to Vishnu, not to Shiva. Generally we associate this with the personal form of the Lord, though it could also be Paramatma, who we call Hari also. Literally that means one who attracts everyone, or one who takes away all of your material desires, etc. A general definition of Supreme Lord. So, in this particular verse, however, then we find that It says that he is in all living beings. So we know that that Paramatma form, the expansions of pure Dakshai Vishnu, are in all the living entities. He's often called Antaryami, that form of the Lord who dwells within the Shiva himself. So that is definitely what we call the Paramatma form of the Supreme Lord. He dwells within the Jivas. Can we say that Bhagavan resides in all the Jivas? In one sense, yes, because Paramatma is an expansion from Bhagavan. However, we can say that Bhagavan resides in all the devotees. Because when one develops devotion, then it is the form of Bhagavan who manifests himself to the devotees, not the Paramatma form, it's Bhagavan. The devotee cherishes a relationship with the Lord in service, so therefore the Lord reveals that particular form, who is the object of service, and that is a Bhagavan form, not a Paramatma form. So when the Lord responds to the devotees, that is Bhagavan form, not Paramatma form. When he responds to the yogis, yes, it is Paramatma form. But when he responds to the devotees, it is Bhagavan. So for the devotees, he is definitely there. For the others, it is the Paramatma form that is in all living entities. So this is one particular quality of the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada distinguishes the jivas from this. And this point was also made in the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 13, when it talks about the kshatragya. So that says there's two kshatragyas, not one. It's the individual jiva. And there is the other kshatragya, who is a kshatragya of all the bodies. So there's a distinction. The jiva knows his own body, but he doesn't know other bodies. And the Supreme Lord, Paramatma, knows all the bodies and all the jivas and all the bodies. So the two exist within the one body. So yes, there is a jiva in every body, but that jiva does not know all bodies. He cannot spread himself everywhere into all bodies in the material world. So yes, in one sense, Atma is in all bodies, but it's a separate little Atma in each body with a separate consciousness, this consciousness of that little body, that's all. Whereas the Supreme Lord, Paramatma, is in all bodies, and he's one but spread in all bodies, and he's aware of all bodies. And of course, he's aware of more than that also. So therefore, there's a distinction between the Supreme Lord as Paramatma and the individual Atma. That we could say once that yes, there's Atma in all bodies. Paramatma is in all bodies, but he's aware of all the activities in all the bodies. And each individual jiva is not. He's only aware of his own body. So, therefore there should be no confusion between the Atma and the Paramatma. Now, the confusion may come is because in the scriptures, sometimes Paramatma is also called Atma. We never have the Atma, the Jiva referred to as Paramatma, but often it just says Atma. And that means Supreme Lord. It doesn't mean the individual Jiva. So there's a little confusion in some of the Upanishads because it talks about the Atma, this and Atma, that. And then it says, oh, it's the Jiva, but no, it's actually the Supreme Lord. The qualities do not apply to the Jiva that are taught when talking about Atma in certain cases. So we have to say, this Atma means Supreme Lord. And the reason, of course, is that, again, etymologically speaking, the word Atma means one who pervades everywhere. So it is the Supreme Lord is the supreme pervader of everything. The individual is pervading his own little body. So primarily the word Atma belongs to the Supreme Lord, and secondarily to the Jiva. However, by convention, we often say Atma means Jiva in the material world. So that's a convention. But actually, Atma is actually the real Atma, the Supreme Atma, is Supreme Lord. And all the other Atmas are under his control. So, there should be no confusion between the Supreme Lord and the individual jiva, in spite of the fact that sometimes the word atma is used interchangeably for both. We have to see the context. Scriptures very clearly define that difference. If we look carefully, we will see that difference in the scriptures. Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita is very obvious, and Bhagavad Gita is very obvious, where Krishna says the jivas are my particles, etc., whatever, like this, parts. Mama Lamsa Jiva Loke. So there's obvious references in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad Gita. When it comes to the Upanishads, then that is where there's a little problem, because the terms Atma is used for both sometimes, etc. There's a confusion there. And this gives rise to a lot of controversial interpretations. Nevertheless, if we look carefully, according to the context of the Upanishads, according to the subject matters being spoken of, and according to the chapter, and according to the conclusion of the scripture, ultimately we see there is a distinction between Supreme Lord and the individual jiva. So that is there in all the scriptures. In other words, there's not different conclusions in different scriptures. Ultimately the same. The scriptures lead to one conclusion. So this is what is presented here by Prahlad. He is saying that first he is defining the Supreme Lord, then he defines how the jiva is there also. He is saying you're not the material body, and then you have to worship the Supreme Lord. So, in this particular verse, he is distinguishing that Supreme Lord from the jiva by saying that he's using these different words. He is Bhagavan Ishvara Hari, he's in all the bodies. So he's using this to distinguish the Supreme Lord from the jiva. So many people will question why we are so attached to distinguishing jiva from Supreme Lord. Now, of course, scriptural obedience to scripture is there, of course. But the reason the distinction is made is because without that distinction, there is no bhakti. If there is no jiva, there is no concept of bhakti, unless it is illusory bhakti only. If the jiva is illusion, the bhakti is illusion also. So, the primary distinction in Vaishnava theology is the difference between the jiva and the Supreme Lord. Based on the difference, then we know the bhakti. And without that difference, no bhakti. All the bhakti is temporary and illusory. So, of course, the next question, well, why do we have to have the bhakti? What is the significance of bhakti? We can have bhakti now and then get rid of it later on when we merge into Brahman. The answer, of course, is that according to the definition itself, there is no merging because the two entities are eternally the same. Jiva is always Jiva, Supreme Lord is always Supreme Lord. But the other reason, of course, is that it is through the process of bhakti that the jiva can experience the highest ananda. That ananda is distinct from the ananda of merging into Brahman. In fact, the ananda of Brahman is not really ananda, even according to the impersonalists, because ananda is a quality and the nirvishesha Brahman has no qualities. So therefore, it is simply the absence of material birth and death, old age, disease, ignorance, etc. Material suffering, material ignorance is gone. The argument the other way is that real ananda should be a positive thing, and that is what exists in a relationship with the Supreme Lord. There is positive ananda through the development of spiritual relationships, bhava and rasa. With that we get the supreme bliss. The Lord himself is described as Satchit Ananda. And when we talk about the Lord, Bhagavan, being full of bliss, We do not say that, oh, that bliss doesn't mean bliss. It is only a negation of material suffering and ignorance. No. It is a positive quality of the Lord, not simply a negation of a material quality. It's actually a spiritual quality of the Supreme Lord. What's wrong with quality? Nothing, because it is related directly to the Supreme Lord, so it's spiritual. The material world qualities, of course, are material things. The qualities of the Supreme Lord are not material, they're spiritual. They're emanations from His Surup. So therefore, there's no fault in those particular qualities. So having bliss is not a fault in the Supreme Lord. And in fact, that is considered to be His, let's say, most prominent quality, more than the chit and the sat. Karunanda is His principal quality. Okay? And this, of course, is testified in the Taittiriya Upanishad, that the Lord is bliss, Ananda. I've quoted with Anandamaya Purusha, there's a whole discussion of that. Different koshas, and then we get to Anandamaya Purusha. The Anandamaya Purusha is the Supreme Lord. He is He who is condensed bliss, or composed completely of bliss, that is Supreme Lord. And the jiva, on attaining the Lord, becomes blissful. That's also stated there in the Taittiriya Upanishad. So, therefore, the Supreme Lord's quality is bliss, and the jiva, by serving the Lord, also partakes of that bliss. So that is quality of spiritual bliss, not a negation of material quality. So it is only through the distinction of the jiva and Supreme Lord that that takes place for the jiva. Otherwise, the jiva simply gets negation of material suffering in the Bhagavad. So, as I said very clearly in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita, you'll find this clear distinction made between Supreme Lord and Jiva. And through this, then we can establish the process of bhakti and the ultimate goal of the jiva, which is ananda or bliss. Yeah. One Pradesh, I think, yeah? Yeah, that's discussed even in the Brahma Sutras, because it becomes problematic. Is Paramatma in the ant also 6 inches, or in the elephant and the whale, is it 6 inches also? So the answer is that it's adjustable according to the form of the particular body. For our understanding, for our dense material mind, that the dimensions like this are given, right? And another explanation is that a particular dimension is given as convenient for meditation. And when we meditate, then we need the form, and then we have this, the form is in the heart, so we think of 6 inch form in the heart, meditate like that, only for meditation. But obviously the Lord is not limited in size. He is bigger than the whole universe, like in the Purusha Shukti, expands beyond the universe. So, and the universal form, of course, is there, or the form that Vamana, when he expanded himself, went beyond the universe also. So, by his Shakti, he can display himself as bigger than the biggest, or smaller than the smallest. So, simply being 6 inches is a temporary phenomenon, we can say, just for the convenience of the Jews in the material world. Yeah. He has three forms. What's that? Well, that's in ISKCON, we call him, the Kiridakti, we call him Parma. But actually, in the Parma Sandarva, their Jiva Goswami says all three Purushas are called Parma. Because they're all related to material world, the Purusha avatars. They're distinct from the Lila avatars, etc., and the forms of the spiritual world.
Lord's potencies are inconceivable, then why he cannot reveal himself in the form of a human being?
Who, the Supreme Lord? He does. Krishna. Human form. Ram, human form.
As an ordinary human being.
How do you mean ordinary human being? With a material body? With a material body? But then if he has a material body, then he is subject to birth and death. Why would he want to be separate from birth and death? Then he would be, why would we worship him? If he's a material being like everybody else, then he's a jiva subject to maya. Then what's the point of worshiping him at all? Under the control of karma and material energy, then he's not worthy of worship. Why is it? Yeah. Extreme ignorance. That's all. Just like we could say, oh, how come everybody's a jiva within the body, but nobody realizes it? Birth after birth, they go on and think of the material body, even though the atma's in the body. They are the atma, but they never realize it. Ignorance. They don't realize atma, and they don't realize karma, neither of them. You clearly understand that all arises from where? Before that? Oh, the translation. One should offer respect to every living entity for the living entity's position and manifestation. So, yeah, so what is the meaning? Yeah, this actually is a little bit of an expansion upon the words of the verse itself. In other words, one injunction is to worship the Supreme Lord, as is what you remember the Supreme Lord as the Paramatma, etc. So one should respect the living entity. Now there's two aspects of this. There is the Atma within the living entity, and there is the Paramatma in the living entity. So obviously the Paramatma is in every living entity. We have to respect them. And secondarily, the Atma is there, the Jiva is there, who's also an expansion of the Lord. We have to respect them. However, at the same time, though the injunction is there that the wise man will see the dog and the dog eater and the cow and the Brahmana, etc., as you know, equal sama sarvesha bhuteshu type thing, we do offer our respects a little bit differently to different entities. So we offer more respect to the cow than we do to the cockroach, or more respect to the tulsi tree than to the dandelion, or like this, more respect to the Brahman, to the Sudra, like this. So there is some distinctions based on the bodily forms. Also, there's some definite guidelines there, in spite of the fact that the karma is in all things. So by convention and by according to the relationship with bhakti, we have some different types of respect we offer. Mani Marikari? Well, the Mani Marikari will also see distinctions between devotees and distinctions between jivas, those who are non-devotees, those who are devotees, those who are innocent, etc., those who are higher devotees, those who are madhyams, those who are finishes. He will make distinctions like that. Yeah, and the Prem Bhakta doesn't. Everyone is a devotee of the Lord. Well, there are atmas everywhere, definitely. I mean, in all parts of the creation. In other words, the material world exists for the enjoyment of the jivas. So if there's no jivas there, then what's the use of it being there? So every place has jivas, obviously, in the material world. So that's just their sarva ga.
Nirantara Sri Sri Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Sri Sri Bhagavatam Maharaj ki. Sri Sri Bhagavatam Sri Prabhupada ki. Sri Sri Bhagavatam Sri Prabhupada ki.